Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. Lynette Young.
That would be me.
That's you. Thank you for joining me on this impromptu podcast with absolutely no forethought, totally spur of the moment, just to shoot the shit and talk.
Hey, impromptu and like that riffing, that's kind of like the best stuff, though.
I agree, especially when we get such awesome people like yourself and myself on either end of the conversation.
Agree. Someday, actually, you and I will meet, since we are close enough to meet in real life, for a drink. And we should probably record that, too, although
100%.
It might just go downhill really quickly.
Oh, my God. That's so what I want to happen, though. I want the entire conversation to hit the deck quickly. Several bourbons in, it'll be great. But I really dig that concept. You know, Chris Penn does that, the marketing over coffee, and I've heard a couple other ones like that. And actually, my best friend works at a company called Quirky, and they do something called Over Gin. And it's basically the person in charge of the community manager of the community for Quirky speaks with an employee at Quirky, and they do it over gin, and they just talk over gin. It's so cool. Yeah. So
sign me up.
You and I are going to do something quite like that, and it'll be awesome. So, awesomeness. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and since you are the first person that I have had on Social Media Philanthropy Conversations Edition, I'm going to just quickly explain for those that are first-time listeners what Social Media Conversations are all about. Social Media Conversations is a segment of the podcast where I talk to people that I find very interesting, and I get to ask them whatever the hell it is that I want to ask them, because I'm really freaking curious to hear what they have to say about it. So Lynette and I have known each other for 2-3 years now. We have a lot of the same circles, and we work on a lot of similar type of engagements, similar type of clients, but enough so that we're, I don't think, ever in direct competition, but we both love and appreciate each other. So here are some things that I really want to talk to you about. So are you ready?
Probably not, but you know, hey, go ahead.
I think you're ready. You know what? We're just going to assume you said you're ready. So
right.
The first thing is, and I got this question recently, so I'm really curious to hear what your take is on it, because I have a very specific opinion about it. What do you think about the concept of a career in social media? If you look out the next 5 years, what the hell does that even mean, to have a career in social media? And, you know, you and I have been in this for a little bit, but what does it look like moving forward?
Well, one of the things is I guess that I've been in technology since the very late 1980s.
You definitely almost messed up that time.
Am I going to lie and skim off a decade or not? But the thing is from my take on this whole thing, everything evolves very quickly. And my point in my entire career and in my business is to be out of my own job in 5 years. 5 years ago, what I was doing that was the hot thing was Second Life, for God's sakes. Who in their right mind would hire me for that, right? You know, 5 years ago, companies were also hiring me to do web video and to record it, for, you know, and you would pay $300 to get, you know, an hour to get technicians to record this and strip it and do all, and now you can do it with the push of one button, so they don't need me anymore. So what I'm hoping is that this will all evolve far enough where it just becomes part of specific industries and specific job titles. And, you know, we all know where that's going to fall. It's going to fall across a couple things: sales, marketing, public relations. Maybe hopefully the C-suite will still be paying attention. And then, you know, the tech people always have to be the underliers to make sure that all the lights still flash when they're supposed to. But I don't really think this is going to be a job. I mean, no one, yes, there are people that are experts in email servers and email, you know, that kind of thing, but nobody does fax, you know, there's no fax professionals. But back when I worked in technology in corporate, we used to have to hire consultants, and their expertise was in faxes and fax machines. And it just seems ridiculous now.
Yeah.
So I think that it's all going to go away, but right now it's really shiny. And people are still kind of fighting over where it belongs and who owns it, kind of thing. So there's still a lot of that peeing on trees going on. But I think when that settles down, it's just going to be kind of part of everybody's job. It's like, if I see one more person list Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office and specific versions as a skill LinkedIn, I'm going to choke them. You know what I mean? Like, in 5 years from now, we should not see somebody say, you know, I'm a Twitter expert, because you're not. Everyone's going to be a Twitter expert. It's okay. It's a tool. So that's kind of where I'm hoping it's going to go. But sadly, it's going to be when my generation dies out and we finally get in our rocking chairs. You know, and I'm in my early 40s, so it's like, you know, when in another 5 to 10 years, when we're kind of not really so personally vested in where all this goes, and we've already kind of been brought up the next working generation, I think, and then those kids won't just, it'll make no sense to them to have a specific job function for, you know, social media outreach. It just seems like brain dead to them. It's going to fall into Marcom and tech and all that kind of stuff, so...
I couldn't agree more. It was very similar to the answer that I gave. I really just see it folding into other functions, and it'll just be kind of very similar to, you know, the idea of Google Plus. It's not a social network. It's a social layer. I think there'll be a social layer on top of all job functions. It'll just be another tool like email or everything else. I do still think that as things evolve and change, there may still be a role for people who are in data analysis or that are in strategy, but it will ultimately be, thankfully, and what you and I know are big advocates for, will be anchored in the business value and tied to business goals, not, you know, making people good at social media, but looking at it from the business value perspective. So,
yeah, and you actually bring up a good point. So where everybody in it that I feel is kind of fighting for ownership or dominance of the tool set and the channels of, you know, does it belong to PR? Does it belong to marketing? Who have you? I think it belongs to business. I mean, when you're talking about it in a professional manner, if it's just somebody that wants accounts to communicate, whatever. But I think it belongs in biz dev, to be completely honest, you know, which is something not a lot of people talk about, because the end goal is you got to bring business for doing the work. And if you can't do that, then it's useless, in my opinion. And there's nobody better to bring business than the biz dev folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And also marketing to support that, of course. You know, marketers, the big M, as it's been said, not like the marketing communications, but, you know, building the market, understanding the market, creating the market, all that. Something else I thought that you said was really interesting, and I recently touched on this, and it just came out of my mouth. I didn't even think about it when it happened, but you had said, you know, you want to be working yourself out of your job every 5 years. And, you know, when I started True Voice Media, it was a social media agency, or actually a mouthful. It was a social media professional services agency. Blah. But then I recognized that really what I wanted to do is tie it to business value. So it became a social business agency. And I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and he said, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I didn't think about it really long and hard. Just what came to mind was probably my company will have evolved into something else. It won't be a social business agency anymore, because that conversation will be passe and there'll be so much more convergence that it would be hard to say we just do social business, because there's so many other things that are converging with it. I mean, even now we do some graphic design, some search, some this, some that. So like as we grow, there's no telling what we'll take on and how that'll how absorbing new functions may change what we do. So I completely agree. I think it's a constant reinvention. I mean, I've changed my website 18 times. You know,
you know, it's funny you say that, because in the beginning of this, you kind of introed us quickly about, you know, where we're kind of in similar lines of business. From the outside, people will definitely see it as that. Mm-hmm. But where I want to be in 5 years is completely different than where you want to be in 5 years. And we're kind of in a roughly to the outside world, you know, walking into somebody at the food store kind of from the outside world. They would see us as the same industry or possibly competitors. But, you know, we each focus in different niches of clients, you know, whatever their line of business is. But where I want to be in 5 years is actually I want to be in the place. And it's kind of what I've been doing the whole time in my old tagline from like the late 1990s when I first, you know, started moonlighting and stuff, was where creativity meets technology. And that's where I want to go. I want to go into helping companies or even authors build these transmedia storytelling devices online that mixes really kick-ass technology and really shiny like AR type stuff with amazing, like heart-wrenching storytelling. Like, brands can do that. Like, it's not just an author type thing, but that's kind of like where I want to be in 5 years. I dabbled a bit in it in Second Life, where we got to work a lot with creating, you know, a 2D/3D virtual area that you can create anything that you wanted and kind of become immersed in that for a company or for a brand, but the platform just wasn't, it was a little ahead of its time. But that's kind of still where I want to go. And it's not, you know, in the social side of things, it's a storytelling in the digital side of things. So it's interesting that you brought up what you want to do, because where I want to be in 5 years is totally different. Yeah. But we'll still be friends.
Yeah, we can totally still be friends. And there's still some overlap there because, you know, storytelling and that, you know, that's a lot of what I look at my role currently as is when I work with clients. I'm trying to help tell the human side of their brand and help them to better connect with their audience through the vehicle of storytelling. And it just sounds like, you know, one of the ways that I would go about doing it might be different than one of the ways you would go about doing it. But I think the interests are aligned, maybe not the the tactics.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. So we are clearly both amazing. okay, so I want to ask you a question that is a little sticky because you and I are both business owners. We have our own companies. We pave our own way. We answer to no one except the client, of course, and the king, cash, you know, cash flow, the king. But I want to know what's your biggest frustration in being your own business owner? You've been doing this a lot longer than me, and I am so curious if it's the exact same things that bother me in my business.
The thing I think outside of wearing hats that I don't thrive in, like I hate doing sales. Like I don't like pitching myself at all. I'll pitch a team, I'll pitch a product, you know, all that kind of, if it's a we, I'm good with it. If it's a me, I'm like, it seems too cocky. I'm not real good at pitching myself or selling myself. Closing deals that way. But the thing that frustrates me the most is that when I have a great relationship with a client and then they start to backpedal, they start to be very unsure of what they want to do or things that they've agreed upon. They say, well, now I don't want to do it because they read something asinine on Mashable or, you know, like they'll be like, we come up with this great plan. You know, we've started making media. They've started seeing business from it. And then they just want to throttle back. And that's the part that frustrates me the most because a lot of companies, I think, that I've been working with, and I don't want to say just mine, probably everywhere, there's always this sense of hesitation that if they see one little thing that they don't understand or one little thing that makes them nervous or they don't get results as quickly as they think that they should, even though we, you know, they kind of look at it, you know, from me coaching them through the process, is that they want to not only just back off the gas, but step on the brakes. And that kind of is very frustrating because a lot of people are really at the cusp. You know, after 6 weeks, you want to throttle back. It's kind of ridiculous. But
what, you can't build an amazing relationship with a wide base of customers in 6 weeks? God.
I know. But, you know, and a lot of it is because some of them that I've worked with in the past feel that they don't look at social, they look at digital, and they don't understand it as such. But they think that any time you do anything online, it's supposed to have the exact same effect as anything else you do online. Like if you were to buy, you know, a junk load of ads that say went across the front page of Yahoo.com, that click-through rate, they figured, you know, at all that money is supposed to have the same exact result as putting your banner ad across some, you know, fourth tier blog. Like they don't understand the difference in community and reach and that sort of thing. They think an impression is an impression or a blog post is a blog post. And it's kind of frustrating when they haven't really come up to speed yet and they think the whole thing should just be set on fire. So that's my biggest frustration.
Gotcha. All right. Right on.
Was it the same as yours?
Well, I mean, it was funny. You led off with what I guess would be my ultimate one is wearing all of the hats. And that's just because that creates such excessive stress to run a business and to juggle all of, you know, the you know, flaming pins in the air or spinning plates or however you want to look at it. You know, my weakness, I definitely get a little bit bogged down when I'm looking at, you know, the finances of my business, the accounts payable, the accounts receivable, because it just takes me out of my sweet spot, which is, you know, designing strategies and working directly with the client. I, unlike you, I love sales meetings. I love talking about what I do, so it doesn't bother me. And I'll hype myself up all the time. I got no problem with that. But yeah, the frustration of wearing all the hats is tough. But if I had to choose another frustration outside of that, I would say that it's the difficulty of looking at myself like a client. So I can sit down I've sat down with, I mean, so many different business people, from clients to prospects to just friends, and I listen to their problems, and I feel like I know immediately. Like, it just, gotcha, here's what you should do. Like, it's just something that I've trained, I've honed from all the reading and all of the writing and all the things I've done. I've got a pretty clear sense of how to help a business use the web. And then I look at my own business and I'm like, duh, I don't know who my target client is. I just want to help everyone. I'm like the client that I yell at that's like, who's your target? And they're like, everybody. And that's me. And that's like the worst thing possible for me, is that I cannot even look at myself like a client. I fumble about and make every mistake that I would like – just not ream my clients out, but I would work with my clients through, and I look at myself that way, and I'm just incapable of it. And that's so frustrating to me. I mean, obviously there's like stuff that happens with certain clients, and you know, there's good clients and bad clients. I'll be the one to say it. But for the most part, you know, I have great clients now, and they're all fantastic to work with, and I have no frustrations there. And you know, all that stuff seems to be working out. My biggest one is that my own company, True Voice Media, is my absolute worst client, because they don't do anything that I would tell them to do.
Oh yeah, we totally don't eat our own dog food.
Oh god, we're the worst. Don't. I have so many projects. My 20% time is a full-time job at this point, and I don't get to any of it. There's so many ideas in the pipeline, I just don't even mess with it.
Well, that's the thing, though, too, that people that have an entrepreneur gene in their body, like you and I,
yep,
will... entrepreneurs are born because we have multiple great ideas, and we're genetically programmed. We have to spin all the plates to see which one's going to go the farthest.
Yep.
And whereas like, a friend of a professional friend kind of thing, he's like, I want to start my own business. He's really rock solid in what he does professionally, and he's always been an enterprise, you know. And the question is, what do you want to do? Well, he has got great talent, but he doesn't have any drive or any ambition as far as a product or type of service that he wants to offer. So he's just floundering around right now looking for someone to give him direction on, here, you should go build this, or you should go make this as a product, and then he'll be like, okay, and then he'll go off and do it, which that's not really, that could be a small business owner, but that's not an entrepreneur. That's not how we're wired. And I'm the same way. I have 16 different things that I want to do full force all the time, which address 16 different, you know, targets, audiences, and they're all vastly different. So any work I do on one isn't going to benefit the rest. And whittling it down and saying I'm only going to focus on one is really, really hard, because those 15 other things keep bouncing in my head and I want to do them.
I have like this warm feeling in my heart right now. No, I'm not kidding. Like, there are times the word entrepreneur is so buzzy right now, right? But at the same time, you know, like, seriously, fuck that. Like, I don't care that it's buzzy. I really believe that there are people out there who are entrepreneurs, and I believe, much like you do, it is hard-coded into our DNA. We cannot escape it, and we are all effing crazy to some extent.
Yes.
I just had a conversation with a friend of mine about this recently. It was, on my Day in the Life blog, and we were talking – it was an assignment for his Villanova MBA, and we were talking about what it means to be an entrepreneur and this and that. And I really firmly believe, and talking to people like you and my mentor and other entrepreneurs, it always just makes me feel like at home. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, there are other people like me. I don't feel like, so what? You mean you can't work for other people? I remember having a conversation recently where I was telling people, I just don't know if I could work for somebody else ever again. Now that I'm doing this, and I respect the hell out of the fact that other people can work for other people.
We can work with other people, but I don't think we can work for other people anymore.
Agreed. 100%.
That's a big difference.
100%. Like, you cannot hold anything above my head and try and control what I do. You can simply unleash me and take advantage of the passion and burning fire that I have to change things and make things incredible. That's it. And it's not always going to work. By no means. We entrepreneurs fall flat on our face constantly. But
yeah, and that's the other thing, too. People that I know, especially when I'm saying this economy, I'll give you air quotes around that, is that people, they come up with these great ideas. You know, they have one idea that they want to do, and they hang on to it for dear life, because if it fails, they fail with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? All right, that idea sucked. Wrap it up. Package it up. Archive next.
Yep, or change it. Tweak direction. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with shifting direction. There's nothing wrong with figuring out a new direction to go. But, it really does warm my heart whenever I talk to another entrepreneur, because it further and further solidifies that's me. It's because you say that it's my words coming out of your mouth. It's your words coming out of my mouth. Same thing. We are destined to do this. And, it just warms my heart. So let me ask you how, if you have this problem as well of the not eating your own dog food, how did you come up with your target market? Did it just emerge, or did you like have somebody stop and ask you questions? How did you go about doing it?
Well, actually, it was two things. And I don't want to say that I'm not there, but because I have to constantly, or I feel like I have to constantly reinvent myself for a couple of reasons. Number one, the market changes so quickly. Number two, I get bored very easily. And number three, you know, evolve or die.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. But what it is I listen to what are people asking me for the most, or what are they asking me for the most that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is where is there a hole in the market? Like, I'm really good at a lot of, you know, Facebook technical blah blah blah, but you know what? That's a saturated market. There's no, we don't need any more Facebook app developers. We're good.
Yep, yep. I wrote a post called "We don't need any more hammers. We need better carpenters."
Yeah, you know, like why am I going to go into that? And it's some people may not say it's saturated, but you know what? If there's more than a handful of people there, or there's already established rock stars, I'm not going to go and compete with that, because I, when it comes right down to it, a complete diva when it comes to this. Like, when I know something, I want to be the very best at it. And I mean, I think you and I have had this discussion 2 years ago when Google Plus came up. I looked at this platform and I said, all right, here's yet another piece of tech. How am I going to be different over here? Different from the competition, friendly competition, granted, of people that are A-listers, that are friends, that are getting, or that have high profile clients, or those, you know, what's going to make me look different from the outside? How am I going to use this tool differently? And I hopefully successfully did that. But I have to do that all the time. You could never, ever rest, I don't think.
So it's a constantly evolving target. It's a moving target market. Oh,
it's
my God, just coined that. I'm totally copywriting that. It's a moving target market.
Oh,
that's
damn,
good.
Wait, I'm going to get the URL right now. Wait, hold on.
Oh, my God, I just did that. That was awesome.
Bam,
what I did.
Just
bam, lay it down. Moving target market. Yep, yep, yep. That's good. All right, we can end it there. Now, I do have one more question for you.
Okay.
That's it. I had one more question. Do you still have time?
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
Okay, sweet. All right, my final question for you is this. In your expert Lynette Young opinion, I want you to close your eyes, put your hand on your purple hair, and tell me, what is the industry that needs the most help right now in technology, social media, digital, whatever? What is the industry that is just plain effing it up?
Surprisingly, I'm not going to say small business. I'm going to say it's the business-to-business industrial, I think, needs the most help.
Okay.
Now, with that, in that market, because I'm in New Jersey, and finance, pharma, and, you know, what do they call that? Casinos. There's a word for that, though. I don't remember what it is. But, like, all that gambling and stuff. Those, the entertainment. Gaming, yes. Yeah. Finance, pharma, and gaming, those three need the biggest amount of help. They're also regulated industries.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 years ago, I even so much as 3 or 4 years, I don't remember how long ago, every once in a while I go in and I do sort of like a 9-to-5 type consulting gig for a couple weeks at clients, you know, where I have to sit in one of their great cubes. But I'll go back to pharmaceuticals every once in a while because they still have a lot of contacts there, and they feel decades behind.
Mm-hmm.
Decades. And I know that they're pushing. I know that there are strong advocates inside those companies, but I think the industry in a whole is just got their thumb on top of them where they're barely letting them squeak out. That seems really tough for me. And it's Well, it's fortunate because I don't want drug companies running amok and saying, you know, like, here's this pill, it'll cure cancer and grow hair on your head. Like, but so there has to be some accountability.
Yeah.
But I think that that industry has the most to gain and the most to lose from falling back. And that could be business to business. You know, there's a lot of feeder companies out here, too, in between Philadelphia and New York. All the R&D shops in between. We have chemical companies out here that feed the pharmaceutical companies and all of this industry that have been completely suppressed by the fact that they are unwilling and very gun-shy to use digital communications to the best of their ability. And that, I think, is where, in my opinion, is where it's lacking the most. Small businesses, you know, if they got it, they got it. But if they don't, solopreneurs or small businesses or whatever, kind of like under the, you know, $1 million, $5 million a year revenue mark, however you want to look at that, I think it's either clicked already or it has not. Like, I just saw someone in a private Facebook group that I'm in that gave the disclosure. She's like, I've been on Facebook for 5 years and I don't know how to use it. And then she said, and she's like, I don't really I know my email, but I still need help sometimes. Like, and I looked at her profile and she didn't appear to be much older than I am in my, you know, in the, she was maybe mid-40s tops. And that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm like, you know what? You're a small business owner. I get that. I didn't really look at what her business was, but I'm like, fine, well enough, but sorry, you're going to have to stand to the side and things are going to have to pass you by. That's just the way things evolve. If it took you 5 years and you don't get Facebook yet, then you're no online course is going to help you at this point. I'm sorry to say that. But the companies that do get it, they're lean, they're mean, they can pivot, they can move quickly. That's all taken care of. It's these bigger companies that have these weird restrictions on them that maybe they're 100-year-old companies, but they're not going to make it to 120 if they don't keep up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for these much, much larger companies, it almost makes sense to internally kind of break everything up into smaller pieces and let each little piece kind of govern itself and kind of move and you know, pivot to the environment. But when you were talking about pharma and the regulated industries and things like that, one of the things that immediately came to mind for me is that I think one of their biggest challenges, and this is a challenge really when I speak to a lot of different prospects, is that everybody's so focused on social media marketing. They're so focused on talking. Yeah. And when I look at something like pharma, where I see the real big opportunity, and you know, you can totally feel free to agree or disagree, is I think that their biggest opportunity is to use internal social tools to break down the sort of silos in the organization or to be able to collaborate across time and geography with a social tool. I think that could help their, you know, drug development. It could probably help keep everybody more informed about, you know, reactions and various different things. I don't really, you know, I don't understand everything about the industry, but I can imagine that opening up those lines of communication would be really, really valuable for that type of an organization. And then the second thing is that I think if they were to look to the conversations that are happening out there less as a part of something they need to become a part of, but something that they can benefit from. So hearing what people are saying and really listening to, you know, so-and-so has a reaction to this drug, or trying to isolate and determine based upon user-generated data, you know, how they can minimize drug interactions or how they can minimize, you know, side effects or any of the negative impact of, you know, on their brand. I think that would be the real place to use it. And it doesn't seem like that would violate any sort of regulatory hurdles.
Well, in some instances it does, because I know a couple of years ago and I was helping out at a, you know, drug pharma company out here in Jersey, is one thing that, you know, the regulatory is just, it probably would fill a room in books and what they have to follow as far as marketing and advertising or sales specifically. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of what I was working with back then is they were dabbling in the idea of running online communities or forums, bulletin boards type services or communities where they could have these conversations and hire in third-party doctors so they weren't directly liable, and have conversations or answer questions or whatever. Just have a community where other people that were maybe suffering with the same infliction that this particular drug treated, so they could build a community amongst themselves, you know. And is from what I learned, like as soon as someone said, well, I took, you know, this, you know, painkiller, and, you know, they mentioned later on in the post that I got a rash, that has to be reported to the government. And how do you report that if you can't track their IP address and get their real name and you need their social security number? And I was like, holy hell, that's a lot of crap. Just have somebody talk on a message board.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of evolved into companies, you know, wanting even back then to control the conversation. So I think now maybe they've probably learned they can't control the conversation. They can jump on that surfboard and ride along with it, but it's not going to be their gig. But some companies are more built to, you know, they're going to create a community and they're going to feed and nurture that community, but they're not going to run it. And it's going to be there for the benefit of others. And, oh, yeah, their name's going to be on it someplace. So they're going to kind of get that secondary impression, kind of residual marketing from it. But they're not going to be first and foremost. They're not allowed to market directly to them or advertise directly to them. And to a lot of people, that seems like a waste of money when I'd rather put a television ad on or an ad on the radio where I could stick the stupid disclaimers at the end and,
those are,
you know,
ridiculous.
Call it a day.
Yeah, yeah.
The disclaimer's longer than commercial. I love it. You know, this product may cause hair loss and instant death. It's like, yeah, that's great. But, you know, stuff is much more trackable online. But I don't, they're coming around, but they're not totally where they need to be. Pharma is one thing. But, I mean, there's still a lot of business-to-business type industrial companies that say, we don't sell to the end user, we sell to other companies that then buy a bunch of things and put it together and make something else. Like, but they don't realize their purchasing officer at their target companies are sitting on Facebook every night.
Yep.
They don't understand that the office manager over at that company is, you know, an avid whatever, knitter, you know, they don't get it. And yeah, I know it's hard to target people like that, but you know, they do exist online. These people, I think, have lives outside of their jobs, and when I talk to B2B type people, they really only see their target is only ever existing in that professional capacity, and they forget that they're whole people and they have these other personas that are attached to them. Where other industries have come to know that, you know, you can market them in other areas and they'll still be receptive to the message. So I think it's just that they need to come around a bit.
It sounds to me like you're trying to put forth this crazy notion that businesses are populated by people.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that B2B isn't actually a business speaking to a business, but people at a business speaking to other people at a business.
Yes.
That is a wild and crazy notion there, Lynette.
It is.
You are getting a little bit out of control here.
I know. But, you know, one thing that I used once, I remember, is that I was sitting in a meeting once having this very discussion, right, about why it could be beneficial to at least explore the idea of using digital communications to a company that hadn't that bought their domain in the late 90s and hadn't ever actually put up a website. I said, okay, they use it for email. I said, all right. And then I look across their big boardroom, and there's all of these plaques all the way across the local baseball team that they sponsored. And I said, how does that baseball team have anything to do with your business? They said, well, it's goodwill, and we get to go out to the games, and we sponsor ice cream for the kids, and we meet all the parents, and the parents are prospective customers. And I just sit there, and I'm like, how is that different than anything else I'm proposing to you? And it's not. They just can't make the link to online.
Seems like they should be able to see the link after that one. But,
well, yeah, they do. But also, you know, I see that, but it's also the markets that I'm most scared of, because I really don't know if I have that much fight left in me anymore.
Fair enough. One last thing before we wrap this up. I was just thinking when you were talking about the drug commercials on TV, my absolute favorite of all of those are at the end of the Ambien commercial, you know, the sleep drug, it says may cause drowsiness. I love when the issue that it's trying to solve is what they list as a side effect. It's not actually the side effect. It's the intended effect if drowsiness happens from a sleep aid. But that is neither here nor there. Well, Lynette, I don't want to take any more of your time, and I so appreciate that you decided to join me for this impromptu, awesome conversation. And if you are willing, I will have you back anytime.
Absolutely. But we need to grab a drink, though.
Yes, definitely. Next time, what we'll do is we'll set up my little blue snowball mic next to my MacBook Air. We'll sit in a quiet little lounge. We'll drink martinis, and we will talk about whatever the heck we want.
Done.
Boom. That just happened. So, Lynette, I thank you very much. And for all of you out there, thanks for listening.